This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Is out there. And here, who knows? But either way, we are opening up the Bloom Files here on Post Show Recaps, an X-Files First Watch / Rewatch podcast. Hello, everybody. Mike Bloom here. No, I'm not currently watching you from my hideout with John Locke, but I'm here to talk to you about two more episodes of the final season proper, regular. I don't know. What term should I use here, Angela? Like X-Files 1.0?
Yeah. The reboot is the other one.
Yeah, though it doesn't even feel like X-Files 1.0. Again, considering that we have a good cast of characters that are similar, yet it feels a little bit different as we talk about two episodes from Season 9. We are now firmly in the season after recapping the first two episodes last week. It's Season 9, Episode 6, Trust No One, with the numeric one instead of the spelled out one.
Correct.
I guess it's trendy. And Jump the Shark.
Yeah, which is two very, very different episodes, one from the beginning of the season, one towards the end, but we kind of felt like it was more of a one-off, so it didn't really matter to kind of group them together.
And arguably, some people thought the show already jumped the shark at this point, so maybe it's just stating the obvious.
Well, I think it's kind of like a bit of a funny thing to call it that, because that is what the show is doing.
Yeah. Yeah, in many ways. So let's get into Trust No One, because this, to me, is very much like a, hey, did you know this took place post 9/11?
Yeah.
Because so, it's very much in the, I know, I can't imagine what the turnaround it was created in the vein of, but it really is prescient with the Patriot Act and like everything going on with the NSA immediately following the 9/11 attacks in 2001.
Right. So, I mean, there's a lot going on with that. And then I think that also affects the way that the characters can react to that kind of stuff. Because I think previously Scully, you know, Mulder would
Ampersand Mulder
would do a lot more in this kind of situation than they were doing. And, you know, I think that's probably because now it's a little bit touchy to just like willy-nilly run about.
Oh, do you think that's what John Locke's Terry O'Quinn's character's name was? Willy Nilly?
His name was Shadow Man.
Can we not call him Shadow Man?
This is like the fourth time Terry O'Quinn has appeared in this, like, not only in the X-Files, but he also appeared in Millennium as another character.
Do you think when Scully sees him in this episode, she's like, you remind me of the guy that we were working for at the beginning of the first movie?
That guy. And then in season two, there's an episode called Aubrey, and he plays a detective there. And it's like, keeping him, bringing him back is great, but he's a pretty recognizable face.
Like, I hope, like, there should have been a Lost season 9 episode where it's revealed that he is also part of that cloning project.
Yes.
Remember that had all the Samanthas and all the random abortion doctors.
Yes, and you said Lost season 9, but you meant X-Files season 9.
It's all confusing in my head. Look, Shadow Man, Man in Black, like, it's all just coming together in my brain.
Well, and he wasn't famous because of Lost at this point. He was just,
I
say recognizable face because he has, like, a pretty recognizable.
It's probably most recognizable at this point for, what, The Cutting Edge?
Yeah, but I meant, like, he has a very distinctive face, so it's not like you forget him.
And a lack of hair. That's probably the most distinct thing about him.
And a mustache.
And a mustache. So let's open up here. My notes say in this opener, what the hell is this? Because we see, like, black and white footage as if it seems to be taken from, like, street cams, right?
Yeah, so
of
this
Scully
is, like,
talking.
What's weird about this is that it's very, like, CCTV,
mm-hmm.
but, like, we don't have that here. You know, like, if this took place in the UK, especially in London, it would be, like, all very fine. But it's a little confusing where these cameras are installed, who installed them, and I mean... I don't want to say that they didn't do a great thing here, but I don't think they did a great thing here to help stop the perpetuation of, the NSA is tracking everybody. Like, it probably fed into that fever a little bit too much. You know what I mean?
I do wonder how many people were watching The X-Files, and I wouldn't say taking things at face value, but certainly supplanting some of their
views. That's what I mean.
Views.
Like, yeah, I mean, now looking back on it, we know it wasn't to the extreme that everyone thought it was, and if it was, it wasn't affecting the general populace.
Right.
Like, but I guess they're not the general populace.
FBI. Do wonder is there a direct line between, you know, some people who stormed Area 51 a few years back and people who watched The X-Files?
Well, yeah, of course there are, but
because they saw that Morris Fletcher worked there.
Yeah, exactly.
They're like, all right, we got to go. So, yeah, this is where Scully is going to do her opening monologue, where she talks about, you know, I met my perfect partner. She's talking to Mulder, right? She's like,
she's
my perfect partner,
Mulder,
my other.
Yeah, she's writing Mulder an email, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Because they've, and I guess that's what, you know, we're supposed to understand. This is like,
oh, wait, no, I think isn't she doing it to William at this point, right?
Oh, yes. She's writing like a little, like, memoir to William.
You know, in case, I guess, she dies.
Who's to say? I don't actually think it's memoir, but yeah, she's talking about it and she's like, talking about his father and, like, kind of confirming some stuff. And there's a lot of shots of, like, Scully and Mulder kissing and Scully and Mulder, like, in previous episodes doing stuff, like her waking up on in that episode. And it's just like, okay, we got it. Moving on.
Yeah, exactly. The text for this episode seen over the credits, very aptly, they're watching.
Yeah, really. But yeah, so basically the episode starts, like, in a coffee shop, right? With Scully kind of just, like, typing on her computer.
Yeah, because not even a coffee shop. This is a site of the 2000s.
Yes, an
internet cafe.
Cafe.
Did you ever use internet cafe? I feel like you would when you were studying abroad, right?
No, we had internet in our dorms.
Yeah, I guess when I went to London a couple of years before you did, but I wasn't doing it from, like, an educational perspective. So I remember using internet cafes much more then. But
yeah,
we had
plugs for
computer. I feel like that's a real pastiche of specifically, like, the 2000s to the 2010s, because that's when, like, Wi-Fi really started to become popular.
There wasn't really Wi-Fi when I was there. There were some spots, but it was like you had to live in England to actually get in.
Yeah, but that interface, c'est magnifique.
So nostalgia.
It's not, okay, we can use AOL, because AOL probably wouldn't allow for it. So it's like, all right, let's.
But I think we were past AOL at this point, too. So it was
like, so? Well, I guess we were like AOL 2000.
Yeah. So I think like we were probably a little bit pushed past or like kind of like on the tail end of AOL. So things are progressing. There's like Microsoft. There's probably Outlook. You know, all of that stuff is kind of pushing through. But regardless, yeah, Scully's on her computer. She's with baby William. They're kind of just hanging out.
And she gets an email.
She gets an email from an email.
You've got mail.
From an email address called trustnoone at mail.com.
At mail.com.
Wow.
My God, the creativity just oozes out of these people.
I mean,
like black
oil. I love
oil.
When I see an email that's me.com, which are like the funny like iCloud ones. But yeah, mail.com.
I wonder if back in the day, the Wild West of the internet, they had like taken that domain. Not obviously the production company, but is this like the 555?
Probably. Yeah, maybe.
But basically, it's to my dearest Dana.
Yeah, which basically says, so this is like where it begins. This is where the issues that everyone has with this episode start. Because in no episode up until now have we heard Mulder call Dana in a way that wasn't like in a like a very, I mean, I guess he does, but it's a very emotional time. And like,
yeah, I feel like we usually hear him, you know, when he goes, Scully.
Yeah, exactly. Like even when she's giving birth, he's not yelling Dana, you know, so I do feel like that's a little out of character. And then it's a very mushy letter. It's like he misses his family. He wants to be with her and their son. And like, it just sucks because we never saw him and her have like that relationship after William was born. You know, it's like that's the end of season 8 is they're together.
Yeah,
you know,
and
they're in love. They're together. They have a baby.
The next thing we see is the butt double.
Exactly. So it's like we're missing a whole like 6 months of them like doing it, making out, going to the park with their baby.
But
like,
let's
just
focus on the doing it.
Yeah. But you know what I mean? So it's like, okay, this is weird. And then also the way he talks is just very, like, very not Mulder.
Yeah.
So don't love that. And again,
but
it's
we
like,
should say this isn't a front. This is supposed to be Mulder.
Correct. Yeah, they've been emailing each other. Like, in this, like, she goes to an internet cafe so that it's, like, not tracked. Mm-hmm. She gets an email from a very, like, not trackable email or whatever, and while she's sitting there crying reading this letter from Moldy,
yeah, we should also mention here that she is doing what the Gen Z's do ironically now, and she says, I am literally shaking, you know, seeing your words right now.
Almost felt like sexting
a little bit.
Yeah,
like again, in such a public place.
Yeah, like I am taking my bra off, you know, like very like weird verbiage.
Yeah, though I don't know if I were to be in that position, I don't know if I want my, I don't know, propositioner to respond with, I am physically shaking. It's like, well, bite down on something. You may be having a seizure.
Or an orgasm. Anyway, so Scully kind of looks up and she sees a mom with a baby and she's like, oh, samesies. But then she like kind of
she turns back to the shaking.
She turns back to the computer's writing. She looks up and all of a sudden the mother is just not there. And the baby is just like crying. And so she's like, what the fuck's going on?
And she also in the proceedings to take care of this baby.
Yeah.
Leaves her own baby.
Yeah. It's just a weird thing. Cause as a mom, like I would, especially if the baby's in a stroller, like just wheel him over with you.
Yeah. And it was what, like 5 feet?
Yeah.
Maybe,
it wasn't.
Ten
and
feet?
That's the thing. I mean, it was, I don't think it was a terrible thing to do. She could very easily, she saw William in like her corner of her vision. She wasn't like keeping an eye on him, but yeah, so her and the waitress at the cafe are like, what's up, where's the mom? And she's like, oh, isn't that her outside? And she's outside, you know, having a fight with somebody,
arguing with this guy,
this random dude. And so she comes back in and takes the baby and leaves, and Scully's just like, that was weird.
Yeah. But we see later, we finally get to see, at least from my first time in season 9, we get to see what Scully actually
is. This is her job.
Doing, where she is no longer on the X-Files. She's sort of like a consultant now, but she is teaching at Quantico.
Yeah, she's teaching at Quantico. And so,
but though, you wouldn't be able to believe it from the number of times her work gets interrupted in these
two
episodes.
Yeah, it's like truly wild that they think that they what they're doing is more important than like her work. It's just so rude.
Like, yeah, imagine walking into a room of students and they're like, sorry, the professor has to leave every 10 minutes to go do some calamitous wacky thing.
Yeah. But yeah, so basically they visit Scully at Quantico to tell her about a tipster who wants to get in touch with Mulder.
But yeah, basically this tipster is offered, I know all the names of the super soldiers, but I'll only tell Mulder.
Yeah, he'll only tell Mulder. And Doggett's just basically like, we think that you're the only one who knows how to get in contact with him.
Yeah, and of course this is another another bit of, unfortunately, I do think, you know, Scully's a little bit of like a head in the sand.
Yeah.
This season, she's kind of defaulted back to that where she says, no, it's too dangerous. Yeah. We can't do this.
Though, well, it's kind of like, it sucks because Duchovny's not here. So there's no option for her to really say, you know, that it's not going to happen.
Yeah.
You know, so like what, how it, this whole episode is, that's the frustration.
Well, it's interesting because it really mimics to me the beats we saw from Scully in episode 2 of season 9, which is... She's initially in denial, then she realizes it's something that can appeal to her. In episode 2, it was with finding out whether or not William, you know, is was futzed with. In this episode, it's being able to get in contact with Mulder, and she's like, oh, okay, I'll do it now.
Well, she knows how to get in contact with him. It's should she bring him out of hiding for something like this that isn't a sure thing, you know what I mean? So... anyway, they're like, we need you to do this because this is going to be super vital for us to track down these super soldiers, and nobody else can do it but Mulder. And
yeah. And so meanwhile, after Scully says no, she is now going to see again this lady from the cafe. We'll find out later. Her name is Patty.
Yeah. And so she's having another argument with her husband, and then the guy drives off with the baby in the car.
Right.
And Scully's like, hey, that's not great. Are you all right? Do you need help with anything? And like, in a very trusting way, convinces this random stranger to stay over in her apartment.
Pretty wild considering how season 8 ended, right?
Yeah, with that lady.
Yeah, with that lady that got that.
What was her name? Gillian? No, that's
the name of the actress.
Lily?
No,
that's Lillian? Her dog.
I like how you said it was both the actress and her dog's name were the first
two
off your head.
Something like that, though.
But yeah, it was the lady that her mom had, quote unquote, hired to help.
Yeah.
As sort of like a live-in nanny.
Lizzie.
Mm-hmm. It was close to Lily.
Yeah.
So yeah, she should be less trusting.
Yeah, for sure. But she's a mom. It's another mom. I mean, I've been in that situation before. Not this exact situation, but like recently I was at Target with our son and some pregnant lady fell on the sidewalk and I like stayed with her for a very long time.
Mm-hmm.
But I wasn't going to invite her home to my house. I
come home with this.
I waited
lady.
Till the EMT showed up and then I left.
if instead you were like, oh no, please come sit on our couch.
Well, especially since she says like, I don't have anywhere to go. Like that guy just took my, that's a kidnapping.
Yeah.
You know, she should be calling the police and leaving them to do it. So whatever. Anyway,
I'm pretty sure the kid was napping. Meanwhile, Reyes and Doggett are going to spy on a guy.
Well, because they find out where the tipster's call came from. So they're going to like trace it there and they're going to do a little stakeout.
And so we see this guy make his way into just what looks like a normal building, but inside of it is a big old like surveillance HQ.
Well, and so we know that this is Patty's husband.
Mm-hmm.
We recognize him as Patty's husband.
The driver awayer.
Yeah. And so, you know, they think it's the tipster. We know it's Patty's husband. Might be one and the same, but... yeah, they walk inside and there's Shadow Man.
Yeah, there's old John Locke.
He appears to be the boss man of the situation, and he's sort of watching Scully on surveillance as they're talking. He's like, oh, did you have a good night? Oh, yeah, me too. What'd you bring for lunch? Blah, blah, blah. And he's just like watching Scully.
Yeah, it's weird because there's also implications later on that there's also cameras in their homes, which I would believe more so nowadays than I would back then.
They would have had to install them.
Right, unless like it's cameras through baby monitors or something.
No, because baby monitors work. Yes, nowadays again, if you have a baby monitor, it's on a Wi-Fi channel. It's very easy to be hacked, which is why I didn't want that.
Whereas back then, it was just the radio signal.
Yeah, even the one we use is it's a base to camera signal. That's it. That's the only way you can get it, and you have to be within like the radius. So. Yeah, anyway, talk about baby monitors. Scully is hanging out, sleeping.
Yeah, she's passed out, and Patty's gonna
turns off the baby monitor and goes and takes William out of the crib.
Yep, and so Scully's going to draw a gun on her.
Well, so she gets a call from Doggett, and he's like, hey, the tipster they were following just went into her apartment building. So she's like, this guy just went into the apartment building, and, like, you better be careful. She hears William cry. She confronts Patty at gunpoint, which we thought was a little extreme because, yes, she thinks somebody's coming into the apartment. Patty's holding the baby, but, like, if you invite somebody into your home,
yeah,
and you're asleep, and the baby starts crying, and then go and pick. Would you be upset? Like, I don't think I'd be upset.
Well, I think there's a difference between upset and also pulling a gun.
That's what
on
I mean.
Somebody.
I'd be like, "Hey, thanks for picking him up. Like, I'm gonna take him back now. Like, I wouldn't like like, I feel like she did went from like 0 to 60 there.
Which is weird because the reaction she gives here is the caution that she did not give Patty when she invited her over in the first
place. That's what I'm saying. It's like, once she's in your house, you're trusting her around your baby. So, like, you fell asleep with this person in your house. Like, shouldn't you have, like, maybe kept William in your room if you were worried or whatever? But maybe the call from Doggett, like, spiked something in her. But either way, there was no confirmation at that point that Patty had anything to do with that.
But everything's converging. And like you said, they sort of catch Patty's husband, Mr. Patty,
trying to pick a lock.
Yeah, trying to break into Scully's apartment. So, like, now they all sit them down, like, all right, just what's going on here?
Yeah.
And they basically come clean about how, you know, he works for the NSA. If you give him a name, it's fake.
Yeah, he has no names.
He lives off the grid. And basically,
They've
been watching them because, according to Patty, their daughter also has something different about her, just like William.
Yeah, and so Patty says that they only want to keep both children safe, so they're kind of playing both sides, I guess, is what they're getting at.
Yeah, and it also seems like Shadow Man's involved here.
Well, yeah, so the husband, the tipster guy, reveals that Terry O'Quinn discovered the Super Soldier Project.
Yes.
And he's basically, like, investigating that. And so that's why he's led this guy to and Patty to, like, kind of try to get out of the situation.
Shadow Man is incredibly creepy. Just because he's one of those people who, look, we know that the government is spying on us. There is a certain amount of just, like, shrugging your shoulders in response to it. But there is, like, an argument against it in that this is the hands that this type of stuff can end up in, where, you know, you have him being like, oh, I saw you sent that email to Mulder. Oh, I knew you invited Mulder into your bed one lonely night.
Like, yeah,
just
so
addressing
creepy,
really oogie personal facts
that
about
have
her.
Nothing to do with anything else. But anyway, he basically calls Scully, tells her all this, and he's like, you need to contact Mulder in one day, or I'm going to disappear with all of the identities of the super soldiers.
Yes, but we should also mention this happens in Super Conspicuous, where she goes out to meet him, and he calls her, forces her to get in another car, drive out to the middle of nowhere.
Well, no, this is clothes. So he calls her first, and then she refuses unless she can meet him face to face.
Right.
And he's like, okay, if you want to meet me face to face, this is what you have to do. And if you vary from this instruction at all, I will go away.
Including get in another car, drive out to the boonies, change your clothes.
Drive west in a series of vehicles until you're told to stop.
Let me light the car on fire with a remote control.
Yeah, and so she, like, complies, but it's just really awkward when they come face to face, because I feel like what he needed from her or to get from her, this could have been remotely completed.
It could have been an email.
Yeah.
It could have been an email. Sent from Mulder.
One lonely night, you invited Mulder to your bed.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I know everything about you. I'm the future agent, Scully.
So weird.
But they go through, they make the arrangement.
Yeah.
Mulder is coming back on that midnight train to Washington. He's going to be here at midnight. Doggett is not happy about any of this.
Yeah, I mean, so the thing is, like, Mulder and Scully had, like, this is another thing. They had all these conversations about why he was leaving, how he would return, like, where he would be, how they would get in contact. We saw none of that. So they're just kind of giving us these trickles. Like, I guess they had a conversation that they had worked out prior to him leaving, that if he had to return, it would be on train. And so Doggett's
like, odd, because I feel like so many bad things have happened on trains in this show.
Yeah. I guess it's just not as trackable, and it's easier to, like, jump off a train, I guess, if you need to.
I mean, as he will do later on.
Yeah, and so Doggett's like, no, tell him not to come. I think this is a trap, like, and Scully's like, I don't care. Like, I kind of just want to see Mulder, and it's too late.
You convinced me to bring him, and now I want to bring him.
Yeah, she's like, I just want to see him. Anyway, they're all going to, basically, the tipster guy, the husband.
Mr. Patty.
Mr. Patty, Doggett, and Reyes are covering Scully at the train station.
And we should mention that throughout this episode, there is this ominous footage that lasts a few seconds of a green-tinted camera sort of spying on Scully standing on a train platform, and it was sort of media res. It's now this moment.
Well, yeah, and in the beginning of the episode, we see her sort of, like, don't want to say like cowering over somebody, but kind of leaning over somebody who's dying.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, oh shit, is this going to be Mulder? Is he going to die? That's what they're trying to get you to believe. But we're going to find out who that is in a second.
Meanwhile,
but first,
Doggett is going to, let's talk about other fun guest stars from this episode.
Yeah.
So he is going to take the clothes that the Shadow Man had.
Yeah.
The Shadow Man left behind or Scully's old change of clothes?
I don't remember.
Either or, but he takes it to like CSI and
yes.
he comes into contact with
Mrs. Brandingham herself.
Yeah, Mrs. Landingham of West Wing fame. I believe this is President Bartlett's secretary for the first couple of seasons.
Correct.
So she plays a nice little sassy CSI person here as a day player.
She does, yeah. And so, yeah, he's basically like, I need this turned around ASAP. And she's like, all right.
Okay, all right. Well, you do it because you're cute.
Yeah, exactly.
So meanwhile, at the train tracks, things escalate.
Right, because Shadow Man appears, guns down, the
Mr. Patty and Shadow Man pull guns on each other.
Yeah.
Reyes also is there because she knows that something's happening. So she tackles Scully to the ground.
Yeah, before the Shadow Man can kill Scully, Doggett appears, shoots him twice, and then he falls into the train tracks. And we understand that he is seemingly run over by a train.
Yeah, and then in that moment, that causes the TSI guy, mm-hmm. because there's been a shooting, to say, keep going, keep going.
So yeah.
Like, no, Mulder's on that train. And
yeah.
Yeah, I can very much understand how watching this episode in the moment would be
super annoying.
Incredibly frustrating.
Well, yeah, because this is still the beginning of the season. Like, this is... If you are not somebody on the Reddit boards, the message boards.
Those
like,
Reddit boards.
Like the viewer like myself that was like a little bit younger, and the Mulder was gone and then he was back in season 8.
Yeah.
Because after the fact, we know he signed a contract for 11 episodes. That didn't happen in season 9. But because it happened in season 8, we were always on the precipice of, is Mulder going to be in this episode?
Mm-hmm.
Is he going to be back now? When is he coming back? When is he coming back? It was so annoying because now as an adult, I realized there was no way he was going to be in any of these episodes. So now you're kind of looking at it. Yeah, you're looking at it through the lens of like how annoying.
It's a little bit of will they, won't they, but
yes.
It's will they or won't they meet up?
Yeah. Will they or won't they see this actor again?
Right. So it's a bunch of near misses here. And so we see that in the case with this train. Right. And we find out like via radio, essentially, that Shadow Man had been like on the train.
Yeah, so they report that like they can't find his body. So Scully's like, oh, he got on the train and he's going after Mulder. And so she traces that they all are going to chase after the train with Doggett, with Reyes.
Here, yeah, Doggett finds out that basically the trace amounts they found from Mrs. Landingham on the clothing indicates like some weird thing where his DNA can't be tested. They did find some iron stuff in it, which will come into play later. But essentially, this implies that Shadow Man is a super soldier.
Yes, that he's a super soldier himself. And they're now worried that he's going to be after Mulder. And so they're all going to chase after the train. And an employee on the train basically is like, oh, by the way, somebody just jumped off the train into a rock quarry.
And
let's go to the rock quarry.
To the rock quarry, as here comes quote unquote Mulder.
So annoying.
Definitively not David Duchovny.
No, of course not. And so Dog and Reyes are like, Mulder, Mulder.
And the guy's like, oh, I guess I'm Mulder. Here I am.
And Reyes is like, it's Agent Reyes. And he just keeps walking away. And she's like, oh, okay, bye.
All right, see you later. But Scully thinks that she found him,
mm-hmm.
but it's Shadow Man.
Yeah, and she's attacked by him. And then for some reason he is destroyed by the whatever it's magnetite being.
Yeah, so there's like an iron magnetite sort of like it's being mined.
Yeah, iron is one of the main iron ore chemicals in iron, basically.
Yeah, there's like a strip of it in the quarry, and that's where he tracks her down like true horror movie style, right? Like he's got her pinned up in front of this all construction.
And
equipment.
For some reason that reacts with his being
and
he
so
dies.
When he hits the ground, it seems like he turns into metal, or maybe this is like the T-1000 thing where like that's just what his body is and he just like,
well, if you remember when Billy Miles was being recreated after being dumpster crushed,
mm-hmm.
his spine was that like
oh yeah you're
metal-ish
right.
spine
it, yeah,
so
and it did reconstitute.
It's some kind of weird alien metal, and I guess this mineral reacts with it and he explodes, basically.
Yeah. And so
into goo.
To finish this off, Scully writes to Mulder basically being like, yes, I know we couldn't see each other, but I will not be deterred. But,
I love you.
But it will also take a good amount of episodes until we finally see you on the show.
Yeah, till the end. But yep. Don't worry, we'll be cock teased a lot more.
All right.
Well, we won't be.
Yeah. Luckily, I think in the you know vein of this exercise, we'll be able to skip over, I think, a lot of frustration mm-hmm. that a lot of viewers were caused.
Uh huh.
Well, coming up next after the break, we are going to go from internet surfing to a different type of surfing as we jump the shark and we say farewell to the lone gunman in more ways than one.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
And now for something completely different. That thing being the finale of The Lone Gunman, both, you know, the characters on the show and also I would say the series, as this really did seem like the backdoor series finale of the series before after it got canceled.
Yeah, so I think that was something that fans were clamoring for but I think it was like in an effort to appease something, you know, like a very Firefly situation, canceled before you could have any sort of closure. So they had this opportunity to put, you know, let's put it in the X-Files. I guess it was fine.
Yeah. So let me set up the Lone Gunman series, because Spencer did it in all of his emails that he sends. And also,
I'll also talk to you a little bit about the comic book.
The what?
We'll discuss it in a moment.
If you watch the first like 2 minutes of the episode, they also do it a bit as well in a very much like Buffy the Vampire Slayer, like 2000s rock, be like, this is what I do. But basically, The Lone Gunman was a 13-episode series. It was very much not done in a mythical way like The X-Files was. It was mostly, you know, one-offs, and they were actually focused on non-UFO, non-alien conspiracies, or secrets. It was done very much in a lighter style most of the time, much like, you know, Unusual Suspects, as an example, which... Yeah. We'll talk about how maybe that juts up against this episode.
Right.
The series is most infamously known for its pilot episode, which centered around a conspiracy for a commercial aircraft to fly into the World Trade Center, which aired 6 months before 9/11.
Yep. Tough stuff.
They have an intern named Jimmy Bond.
Love Jimmy Bond.
My God. Who's the unofficial fourth member of the Lone Gunman group. Like, we see this a little bit in the quote-unquote previously
he's
on.
He's like, they call him their intern, but he's kind of like their, like, buddy.
Yeah, he's kind of like their benefactor.
Yeah.
He's like he's a huge fan of them. And he's like Spencer described him as a human golden retriever.
Yeah.
Dumb but loyal. And finally, the mystery woman, Eve Adele Harlow, a.k.a. Lois Runtz, is an expert thief and functions as the Lone Gunman's, like, initial rival turned, I guess, apparent ally by the end of it.
Yeah, it's kind of like the Sherlock Holmes with Irene Adler. Is that her name?
Yeah, I think
yeah,
so.
Irene.
She's Sherlock.
Yeah, you know, like she's like his nemesis, and they kind of are in love, and like it's hard to, you know. So I think that that's kind of the vibe they're going for there. But yeah, that's a good synopsis of the show. I mean, I think that the issue that they had here was that the studio really didn't want this to happen. They were like, the Lone Gunman is canceled, you know, but that co-writer Vince Gilligan and Frank Spotsnitz were like fighting to get it done because they felt like it was still kind of an open wound for them. You know, that's what they say. And so they made this to wrap up the series. They were like, I need closure more than anyone.
That's what it really seems like to me. Because, I mean, the other thing is, Scully, for example, appears in the very final scene of the episode.
Yeah.
And that's it. So this really did not seem like an X-Files episode whatsoever.
No, not at all. And, I mean, I guess you could say that, you know, with Reyes and Doggett in it, it is. But, yeah, I mean, it was definitely focusing on these characters. And I guess it was so supposed to be a bit of a tie-in sort of closure for the X-Files side of things too with them, but
right. So basically we start things off with another familiar face, and I was elated to see this guy making an appearance again, Morris Fletcher.
Yeah.
If you remember Michael McKean's character, mm-hmm. sort of a-hole man in black from Dreamland. So he's in the Bahamas with some bikini babe. Guess it didn't work out with his wife.
Yeah. We should also say that the title of the show before we dive in is called Jump the Shark.
Yeah.
But that comes from the phrase jumping the shark, which yeah. I don't know if you know anything about that.
Yeah, of course I do.
But I don't know if our listeners do.
Okay. Yeah. I guess so. There's a little show called Happy Days in which there was an episode where Arthur, the Fonz Fonzarelli, played by Henry Winkler, infamously, I think they were in Hawaii. I don't know. They were somewhere, and he jumped a shark
on a water ski
on his water skis. And people use that term now to essentially
describe a show that has peaked and is no longer good,
or just this idea of a show doing something like very ridiculous that really symbolizes the fact that it is way past its prime.
Exactly. It's on the decline. So yeah, I think that it's kind of funny that they've used that here. Like,
yeah. I believe there's a site, I don't know if it still exists, called jumptheshark.com, where like people would submit entries for when certain TV series jump the shark. Like The Office, after Michael leaves, the fact that they don't keep going can be an example of jumping the shark.
So, anyway, sorry, go back into it. Yeah, Morris Fletcher's on vacay.
He's on vacay. Well,
he's not on vacay.
He's not on vacay, but he sort of is acting like he's on it, right? He's got the zinc oxide on his nose. He's got a babe on his arm. They're in the Bermuda Triangle.
And he's like telling this girl.
I love it. Yeah,
like,
he's gloating that he made it.
Yeah, and she's just like, oh, baby. Like, oh, you did all
that? Oh, you don't say, Mr. Fletcher.
Exactly. And basically, all of this is like bullshit. You know, like, we'll get to it later, but what happens is that a boat comes up and some guys basically take the girl and douse the boat in gasoline.
Yeah,
and,
much like at the end of season one of Lost. We're
gonna
have to take the girl.
And then throw a flame? What am I trying to say? A flare.
Flare,
at the boat, exploding it, basically being like, oh, your boss says you're fired.
Yep, and then we also see, like, a washed-up plans for a spaceship.
Yes, and then that leads us into the episode.
So Fletcher is going to request a meeting with the X-Files, though, again, these are very different than the people he's used to contacting.
Yes.
But basically, he is in trouble as the...
Yeah, he's been detained.
Yeah, as the brigands have sort of referred to beforehand. He's in trouble because he was essentially, it's sort of like a parole officer, like he was supposed to check in habitually with his former employer at Area 51, and he has skipped out a couple times.
Yeah, and so he's being detained, and he basically is like, these FBI agents are going to help me. I have information about the super soldiers.
Yeah, I'll give you the keys to the kingdom. We should also mention here that I believe since the time that their last episode happened in Dreamland, you know, they talk about Men in Black because I think the movie had released the episode.
Yeah, it had. So and then they're like, oh, yeah, I've seen Men in Black. And he's like, they've got some things wrong.
Yeah, and I would imagine that Mulder would also agree because there's like, we don't, you know, have little coffee-loving worm aliens and little aliens don't live in people's heads.
Yeah. Well, and so he's like doing everything he can.
Do you like Men in Black, by the way?
Yeah, the first one. Thought it was fun. Romp.
I like that one.
Why do you ask?
I'm just curious.
Oh, yeah, I like it. It's fun.
I don't think either of us.
Will Smith's great.
We haven't seen the movie together, so
should we watch it?
I like to see it. Okay. I had a lot of fun with Men in Black 1.
Yeah. Anyway, What are we talking about?
So basically, Fletcher, the runner throughout this episode is that Fletcher is going to get caught BSing. Like, yes. For example, this one is he offers up as sort of a little taste of what he could provide the plans that were shown before, but it's actually just plans for the ship from Lost in Space.
Yeah. And and they're like, this is not real. And so they're about to walk out and he just says, super soldiers.
Yep, he just drops it.
And Doggett's like, what?
Yeah. So they go to see the lone gunmen, yes, who are now, I'm assuming this was the set for where the show was.
Yeah, this is where they were before, too. But basically, the reason they're going to see the lone gunmen is because Fletcher shows them a photo of Eve, who, mm-hmm, you know, they recognize as Eve Harlow, you know.
Their nemesis.
Yeah, and so he says that she's a super soldier, but for them, it's like, oh, she's a fellow hacker who just disappeared. And they're like, we don't believe you. Like, no, she's our buddy. Like, yo, that's bullshit.
We should also mention here that Eve is played by, let's go two for two on Lost alum here, Zalika Robertson, a.k.a. Alana,
yes,
from the last couple seasons of Lost.
Oh, and Alana slash Eve slash Lois really, really kills it with the early 2000s fashion in this, mm-hmm, episode.
Specifically, like, the leather.
No, specifically the hip.
Oh, you're
hugging,
talking about the belt. No.
So her pants in general are so low cut. This was like the bane of my existence as a big butt lady in the 90s or in the early 2000s.
Sir Mix-a-Lot would have a word.
No, but like if you had hips at all, this style, like the zippers were like this big, mm-hmm, because they were so low that they were sat below your hips. And then what you would do is you'd take this big, thick belt that was like a leather belt, mm-hmm, that had these like stringy ties, and you would like tie the ties on the side and you'd walk around with this like stupid belt. Anyway, look up pictures of it. It's bonkers. And then later in the episode, she has a similar pair of pants with a thick like leather belt thing going, yeah, on. But yeah, she really is like rocking the like basically teenager look of the early 2000s.
We should also mention here that the lone gunmen are not happy to see Morris Fletcher because,
no,
he was involved in what ultimately was the final episode of the series,
yeah,
where like
he fucked them over basically.
Yeah, he had convinced them to track down Eve, and then when they did, they essentially, like, he on behalf of his who he represented, aka her father, abducted her.
Yes. And so they haven't seen her since.
Yeah, and we sort of find out off screen, like, I guess she escaped at some point.
Well, yeah, the problem with this entire episode is I don't know if everybody was watching the lone gunman who was watching the X-Files. I wasn't.
Yeah.
I didn't even know it existed when I was watching the X-Files as a younger lady, but regardless, it's not good television to not explain things. Like,
I mean, that should be emblazoned in a sign.
Yeah, because like there's a lot going on in this episode that you just do not have context for. Like, why are they mad at this guy? You know, who's this Eve lady? Like, you just don't know. And so like it's hard to get into it.
Right, that's the thing. Is it's you know, the ultimate question of why should we care, I guess, is answered by what happens at the end of,
yes,
the episode. But
exactly.
I do think otherwise the plots are a little holy.
They didn't give us enough at the end. I don't want to say they should have given us more, but the little snippet of what the lone gunman is about at the beginning of the episode was like not you would have to like watch the episode and go back and watch it again.
Yeah, exactly. To be like, okay, now I sort of understand
what was happening in that 30-second clip of the entire television series.
Exactly. So we see what Eve is doing.
Meanwhile, she murders somebody.
And Eve's going back to school.
Yes.
She's going to go visit this professor.
Yeah.
And she not only murders him, she seemingly like blasts a freaking hole in him.
Well, yeah, so she I don't think she blasts a hole, but she removes an organ, and it,
right,
does look like a blasted hole.
Yeah, it looks like she came out with some sort of like alien weaponry where like now there's this glowing cavity in his chest.
Yeah, so she removes some sort of organ and ends up burning it in a furnace. But the gunmen sort of capture her, and she reveals that, you know, that guy was bad. He's been experimenting with the human immune system and sharks and grafting pieces of shark into their bodies in order to become a living host to a biological weapon.
Before we get into that, let's talk Joey Ramone for a second.
Yes.
Because this is also like a bit of banter between Fletcher and Langley,
uh-huh,
right? Where, you know, Fletcher is sort of like the boomer at this point, being like,
yeah,
get yourself a real hero, not some dead teeny bopper. And Langley goes into this whole monologue of, you know what I love about Joey Ramone? You know, he never gave up.
Yeah, he never gave up. He never
surrendered.
Sold himself out. He never was like a peon, you know?
Yeah, and I also like how he very quickly corrects that. And also, he's not dead.
He's He's not dead.
Joey Ramone, I don't know if he is dead now, but he definitely was not dead.
He was not dead when they filmed this. But either way, I don't really get these conversations. I'm not sure what we're supposed to understand here other than like Morris is kind of a dick. And
yeah, I mean, I think it's Joey Ramone actually died April 15th, 2001. So he was dead. Fresh. The body was fresh.
Yeah. Yikes.
But I guess it's more so to be like the difference between, you know, again, a little bit of a catch up as to why the lone gunmen don't like, you know, Morris. And I guess to also, again, build to that conversation that gets had at the funeral, right? Of like, what is a legacy?
Yeah. Well, and I think, yeah, a lot of the conversations they have are like, what are we going to do with our lives? Like, what have we done? You know, all this. And Langley's
right, because,
like,
because we should also mention that at the time we find the lone gunman, like, they are up Schitt's Creek.
Yeah. So we do find out that at first they say all of our stuff is like, we're getting new stuff.
Oh, yeah. We had to trade it out to sell it to the Salvation Army to get new stuff.
Yeah. So they're getting new stuff, but that's not the case. They're actually just broke.
Yeah, AF. Because their paper went out of business.
Yeah.
So we should also mention, like you said, Eve's real name, Lois Runce. You had a reaction to this.
Not a great name.
I mean, listen, it's probably closer to the Durwood Spinks level of things.
It's just not cute.
Just not a good name. I mean, and I believe Eve Harlow's name is an anagram for Lee Harvey Oswald, which is like fun.
So
I don't
stupid.
Know if Lois Runce is an anagram for anything.
Well, no, because that's her real name. Is your name an anagram for something?
It might be.
Not intentionally, though.
Exactly. Well, this is when Jimmy Bond comes stumbling in, though.
Yeah,
right?
So they have this back door to the lone gunman, like, little hideout, and they're like, nobody knows about that back door. Obviously Jimmy does. So yeah. This guy comes stumbling in, they're like, Jimmy? And he's like a little worse for wear
because he has been apparently like wandering the world trying to track down Eve.
Yeah, because I guess that what we understand is at the end of The Lone Gunman, you know, Eve went missing and he's been looking for her ever since.
Yeah, just going around the world. We should also mention another character that gets brought in here that I guess was from the series. We have Jimmy and we have
Kimmy. Yeah.
Why did they do that?
I don't know. But yeah, Kimmy is kind of a hacker and like kind of their... The whole vibe I get is that, like, Langley and him are just constantly, like, at each other's throats about who's the best hacker.
Right, and he seems sort of like, I know that
They're all hackers.
It seems like Langley was told in this episode, right, that he's, like, 30-something, but I guess Kimmy is supposed to be almost like the young wonder
kind.
Yeah,
the young buck.
Yeah, exactly, of like, oh, I can do it much better than you, old man.
Mm-hmm.
So, like you said, they do an autopsy of the professor. They find there's bioluminescence in his chest cavity, and there was cartilage grafted into him.
Mm-hmm.
So
great.
It's
well, I guess we kind of skipped over before, but like there was a conversation about what the professor and Dogge went to see the professor that found the dead professor.
Yeah, because his colleague found him and he saw Eve running out the window.
Yeah, and so Dogge and Reyes are like questioning him and they're like, what did he teach? And he was like, oh, he teaches this.
He's a marine biologist.
Basically, and he was like, well, not really. He's a marine immunologist. And they talk about how sharks have this like amazing ability to like sustain themselves.
Do you remember that? I remember that was really a big thing from the late 90s. There was news about like, oh, sharks might be the cure to cancer. I remember that very specifically as a news item.
But I imagine it was. But yeah, so basically they tell him that they are told that tidbit. So later when we find out that the sharks have been grafted into these people, we're like, why? You know? So
yeah. Meanwhile, Eve is going to take out because she believes that there were essentially the plot is there are two people who sort of grafted this shark cartilage into themselves that are sort of functioning as walking time bombs that are able to release a virus into the world.
And so Eve has pinpointed a second one.
A bald guy.
But when they find him, he don't got no shark in him.
Yeah, but first they like foil her plans, right? Because they try to subdue Eve. And then she's like, you are idiots. I'm not a super soldier. I've been trying to do this thing.
Yeah.
And this is when it all comes apart for Fletcher.
Yeah.
He's been sort of wearing a Band-Aid Nelly style that has a tracking device in it the entire time.
Yeah. And he's basically said that like, oh, the research has been funded by Eve's dad, who's an arms dealer, who had commissioned Fletcher to find her and prevent her from stopping his bioterrorism plot.
Yeah, because it's to release a virus that I love Eve doing some mental math and being like, at 8 o'clock on the dot, this virus will release.
Yeah, and so this is her dad, I guess, like really just like, again, another character that we don't know and don't care
about.
Seems
like a James Bond, not Jimmy Bond villain plot of like, I will send a person out there to release a virus.
Yeah, why? Who knows? Who cares? Anyway, so she's like, there's another host. We need to go get him. And so like he... I guess the issue now is finding this guy.
Right. And so they Doggett and Reyes find the bald guy back at the college.
Yes.
And it turns out that, oh no, they take him into a medical professional.
Yeah. Yeah. So they're kind of like up Schitt's Creek because they basically put their names on the line saying this guy's got a bomb in him.
Hey, this guy's got shark bomb.
And he has nothing inside of him.
And so it turns out that the actual second man, second shooter, if you will, is actually the professor's colleague. I guess
yes.
They stay fairly close to one another.
Yeah.
And so the rest of them, namely all the lone gunman characters.
Well, Fletcher also joins them because he's like, oh, Harlow's father used me, so I'm going to team up with you guys to find the second bioterrorist, blah, blah, blah. So he just kind of like... He's that guy who is, if you're winning, he's with you. If you're not, he's not.
He's very Loki in that regard. But essentially, the rest of them are going to go find the professor at a conference.
Yes, a conference for med biology.
So basically, they're able to, you know, chase him out of the room and they chase him into the back hallway. And there's only 2 minutes left.
And they realize that they don't have enough time. So they pull the fire alarm because they realize there are emergency doors that will seal the place shut.
What kind of conference center is this?
I don't think it's a conference center, but I do think some schools that have biology and chemistry labs, they do have that because of the nature of a fire in those kinds of situations. But
it's like the equivalent of the fire curtain in a theater or something.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, sometimes it's basically trapping a fire so that it, like, if it's within an area of it's not going to cause a further explosion. So
yeah, but it's a wild decision. They sacrificed themselves.
Also, it was very possible that fire alarm did nothing.
Yeah,
you know.
So also, I'm surprised it'd be triggered just by the fire alarm. You feel like any like delinquent pulls it in, like,
yeah, really,
pretty big thing. But here we have essentially, and as they lampoon themselves, it's their own Wrath of Khan moment, right? The needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few, or the one, or
and
the
they
three.
They all kind of like touch hands
case.
With Jimmy and Eve. Their cohorts, and Jimmy is the worst fake crier I've ever seen on television.
Oh, poor Jimmy Bond. Just be like trying to like really scrunch his face.
Yeah, he scrunches his face. I was like, Eve was definitely more effective with like a not crying, sad face.
Lone gunmen are dead.
Yeah, they fucking die.
That is wild to me that, again, these comic foils and the series created as such go out dying, sacrificing themselves to prevent this virus from being released, I suppose, that we just found out about.
And this is where I'm going to talk to you a little bit about the comic book adaptation of The X-Files, which is called The X-Files Season 10, which takes place in an alternate universe after the events of X-Files I Want to Believe, basically. And this is not... The issue is this came out far before Season 10 and Season 11 did. So in this, it's revealed that the lone gunmen are alive and they fake their deaths during the events.
Oh, my God.
And the group was aided by FBI, and then they've been working underground, and like there's, you know, just a lot of like nonsense there. But then in X-Files Season 10, the 11th and the 11th season, the deaths are reconfirmed. So... The comic book can't be canon then.
Okay, so you think some writer was just like, oh, this will be fun, but then Chris Carter's like, no, we're not doing that.
Yeah, when season 10 and 11 came on I don't know, but basically it's not canon, but it did happen. There was like a, let's bring him back in comic book form, like really wild stuff.
Yeah, so what do you think about this decision, whether confirmed by comic or not, to actually...
I don't care.
Have this happen?
At this point, I didn't care because I feel like... You know, it was such a weird conclusion for them in general, whereas there was nothing like celebratory about it. Like, I felt like it was a little phoned in, you know, like,
It just felt like it's interesting because I feel the emotions from most of the actors in that scene. But the more I thought about it, the more I'm like, okay, like,
I just think they deserved better. You know, like, I just don't think that, like, the way they were presented throughout the entire series, this was not what I needed. Like, if you're going to have an episode to close the series, fine. But you don't need to kill them off, you know? Like, cheesy and, like, just, like, not,
this,
I don't know.
This feels more to me like something like a cry check heel turn.
Yeah.
Like, if he would do something like this. This doesn't necessarily, and not to say that comic relief can't have their own serious moments, but it just felt a little odd to me to be like, yep, this is how the lone gunman died, because they sort of also built up this episode of them being really hard on their luck and down, and it's like, that's not the characters that I necessarily knew, but and I guess that series will do it to you.
Well, that's the thing, is like, what's the difference between, you know, the lone gunman series isn't coming back, you know the X-Files is ending, what is the point of killing off these characters when you could very easily just get them back together with their old crew and send them on their way? You know, like, we had one final, like, thing, you know, we're back at it, and then you see them at the end of the episode, like, hacking away. You know, like, what's, why not just do that, you know?
Yeah,
like,
I mean, I guess the point is that they could have this big moment of pontification then, right?
Yeah.
Now they get to sort of live on forever in the legacy, though, I don't know, at the same time, this feels like one of the umpteenth let's stop a virus plots that feels like they sort of get obfuscated in lieu of all the other people that have sacrificed themselves.
Yeah, and it just felt like it was very cheesy the way that it was done, and it was, the way the episode starts out is that classic X-Files, like, this is kind of going to be funny.
Yeah.
You know, this is going to be silly. We're getting an over, we're getting like an overarching recap from Morris Fletcher where it's like, you know, funny, but, and then it just like trickles out from there. So anyway, I don't love this episode, but I don't, you know, it's not something that I felt like it was necessary for us to watch just because it is the death of the lone gunman.
Yeah, and I mean, I think the funeral scene is actually
It's
affecting.
Very beautiful, yeah. And I do think having Scully there is very important, too, because she's like, you know, they meant a lot to me, and I don't think they'll ever know how much they meant to me.
Yeah, I mean, remember when, like, Frohickey went to go visit her when she was in a coma when they
found
her?
She was in a coma. They also were there when she had her baby. Like, they came to visit her after her baby was born.
Yeah, three wise men, yeah. That, and I do wish that she had also played a larger role in the episode as well.
Yeah.
Because then, it feels odd, and it feels odd to not have Mulder there, too.
Yeah, so, you know, I think that I don't know, I just wish that it had ended on a different tone that was a little bit more tonally happy.
Yeah,
you
or
know?
Just, like, more resonant, I think, with what we know of the characters up to that point. But that being said, I mean, I guess I'll appreciate whenever these shows take big swings, and this was a big swing, or you could also say, much like we saw in a lot of season 7, like a loose end that needed to be tied up. Just in this case, it was tied into a noose.
And apparently the actors were fine with it. They were like, oh, we're happy that we're dead.
Yeah.
Like,
I mean, okay. Listen, if I'm an actor and I'm a star of a series that got canceled and I'm told, like, you're going to come back to close out your series, but you die, like, sure. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Give me a meaningful way to end out my plot.
That's true. That is true.
So we end Jump the Shark and the Lone Gunman. Oh, I just realized the shark reference as well.
You just realized that?
Well, like, the fact that there was shark
coverage.
Yeah. I didn't realize that.
It was... Oh, my God. Yeah, that's... Yes.
Well, the shark cartilage thing was one of the 13 weird things about this episode.
And the episode starts with pictures of sharks.
Does it?
It starts with, like, sharks swimming through the ocean. And then you pop up with Morris Fletcher. But yeah, Bloom. Tough to hear from you.
Wow. Summing up the reviews of every podcast that I do.
Judging a little bit.
Well, listen, better late than never.
Yeah.
True. All right. Who are we going to spook? Who are you going to spook? Spook, spook, spookity spook.
So the first episode, I'm going to spook Terry O'Quinn.
Yeah, you got to spook that Shadow Man.
And this episode, I'm going to spook Kimmy.
Kimmy? What did Kimmy do?
I hated him.
You just hated him?
Weird vibe from
so
Kimmy.
So he gets like a very antagonistic spook from you?
Yeah, I am
going to spook... So I agree with Shadow Man. I got a double jeopardy on him. I think I'm going to go with... No, I got to go with the professors. I got to go with just this odd plot of
immunologists that graft things into them.
Grafting shark parts onto yourself. And this is not like a Street Sharks thing where you're half man, half shark. You're just taking flat out shark biology and putting it inside your body.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That sounds weird AF.
Mm-hmm. Anyway.
Well, let's continue the weird AF stuff. We're actually going to rewind here as we're going back in time. Yeah, something does burn in this episode. So I actually believe someone told me that the lone gunmen do show up in these next two episodes. So we get to sort of see them
backtrack a little
before their deaths. But it is a two-parter in the middle of season 9, episodes 9 and 10, Provenance and Providence.
Yep.
Yep.
Get ready for some backtracking.
In terms of life.
So the first episode, I think, has a lot to do with biogenesis and the sixth extinction, you know, with the big spaceship. So you're going to see the rubbings.
The metal plates and everything.
Yeah, you're going to see like rubbings a lot. And then we're also going to be introduced to a new character that is the new leader of the new syndicate.
They introduced the new syndicate?
Yeah.
We'll get into it. They're like, I don't know, more diverse.
This guy's name is Toothpick Man.
Toothpick Man.
Cannot wait to talk to you about Toothpick Man.
I swear to God, if he's not made out of toothpicks, I'm going to be very angry.
Well, he's not. He's definitely not made out of toothpicks.
I want the main antagonist of this series.
So yeah,
out of toothpicks.
We'll see. It's a lot of like, oh, William is in danger.
And he's also maybe
an alien. We're not sure.
Providence, I would also assume, maybe refers to a bit of a trip up to, you know, the Mulder family is basically now almost dead, but maybe a trip back up there.
We'll see.
We shall see, because it ain't just a river in Egypt or a place in Rhode Island. So back next week, episodes 9 and 10. You know what to do if you have any thoughts, as we are nearing the end. I think this is our anti-penultimate week next week.
Our anti-penultimate week. So
not our uncle penultimate week.
We still have two more after this.
Exactly. Third,
and then maybe a fourth.
We'll see. I'm really intrigued by this comic stuff. Now about this idea of
I would not be, but okay.
So we'll be back next week with those two episodes, and then two more after that to finish out season 9 proper. BloomFiles@PostShowRecaps.com, XFiles@PostShowRecaps.com. Follow us on Twitter @AngePelagi, @MikeBloomType, @PostShowRecaps. If you're interested in fantasy, Angela and I are also starting to finish up our coverage of The Witcher Season 2. We're talking the penultimate episode of Season 2 coming up this week as well, and a bunch of other stuff going on at Post Show Recaps that I just do not have the time to get into. My attention span is like a shark's. I smell blood in the water.
Mm-hmm.
So that's going to do it for this week on The Bloom Files. Thank you all so much for listening. Special thanks to Corey B for his theme song, which you're hopefully all listening to at this moment. We'll be back next week with episodes 9 and 10 of Season 9. But until then, case closed.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from, with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from, with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered ChumbaCasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.